August 26, 2012 started off as a relatively normal night. Terrell Barros was at Monet Lounge in Providence, Rhode Island with Stefan Bodden and some other friends. A disagreement ensued between Stefan and two other clubgoers, Rakeem Henley and Jamal Cruz. But the tension didn't boil over until later in the parking lot. See, Stefan Bodden wanted his cigarettes, and he would ask Terrell for his car keys, because that's where they were, so he left ahead of the group. And as fate would have it, who was parked right next to Terrell but Jamal and Rakeem, who were now ominously approaching. Terrell and the rest of his friends, though, were just arriving on the scene and trying to avoid the drama, so Terrell made for the driver's side door. And then, gunshots. Terrell quickly ducked into the driver's seat, and Stefan Bodden jumped into the passenger side. Seconds later, the cops were at the car, and they saw Stefan trying to hide the gun. Stefan confessed on the spot to the shooting as both men were cuffed. An intoxicated and mortally wounded Jamal Cruz had put his head down when shown Terrell, a far cry from an identification. But that didn't stop a detective from testifying at trial about a quote-unquote dying declaration. The state even ignored Stefan Bodden's immediate and uncoerced confession, forging blindly ahead to ultimately send Terrell to prison, where he remains to this day, serving two consecutive life sentences plus 30 years. This is Wrongful Conviction with Jason Flom. Welcome back to Wrongful Conviction with Jason Flom. Today, we're going to be discussing the really troubling case of Terrell Barros, who was wrongfully convicted of a shooting in which one person was killed and another was badly injured. And with us today, we have a student at Georgetown who's been doing incredible work investigating his case under the leadership of my friend, Professor Mark Howard. So, Nirjana Hendy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jason.
The Georgetown class that Nirjana is a student in is taught by Mark Howard and a name that you'll recognize from being on our show more than once, Marty Tankliff. And of course, this class was directly responsible for the exoneration of Valentino Dixon. If you haven't heard his episode, please go back and listen to it. It's extraordinary. So we hope to be hearing from Terrell Barros very soon. Of course, in this COVID time that we're in, it's very hard to get to the phones in prison, but we will be discussing his case and hopefully hearing from him as the podcast progresses. So let's go back to 2012.
Back in August of 2012, Terrell Barros and a group of friends headed out to Monet Lounge in Providence, Rhode Island. While they're in the club, there's some sort of verbal altercation between Terrell's group and a couple of members of another group, including the two that got shot. One was Rakeem Henley, who got shot in the leg and who I spoke with a couple of times over the past few months. And then Jamal Cruz, who ended up dying that night. But Terrell wasn't a part of that verbal altercation. It was Stefan Bodden who was. And so a name was called, someone's hat got tapped off their head, and then no one really stays. There's not a physical altercation at all. Later on in the night, Stefan Bodden asked Terrell, he goes, hey, let me get the tack to go get your car keys. So as he's heading over, there is another car that is parked bumper to bumper with Terrell's car. And it just happens to be the car of Jamal Cruz. Stefan thought that Jamal and Rakeem were coming to cause problems when in reality they were just walking to their car. Stefan grabs the gun and, you know, witnesses say he told them don't come any closer. And at this point, Terrell starts heading over to his car with his group of friends. Terrell is about 10 to 15 feet away from Stefan Bodden and Jamal Cruz, which is where all eyewitnesses place him as well. And he's actually walking to get to the other side of his car to hop in the driver's seat because he knows that there's trouble about to happen and he doesn't want to be a part of it. He hears two gunshots. He jumps into the driver's seat and almost immediately, Stefan jumps into the passenger seat and the cops are there to arrest them.
And there's more to this too, because when Stefan jumped into the passenger seat, he had a sort of a moment of self-awareness, right? Where he started apologizing to Terrell for sort of involving him in this?
Yeah, you know, at this point, the arresting officers are on either side, and the gun is still with Stefan Bodden. He is caught concealing the gun in the passenger side door, and Stefan actually confesses on the scene. He said, "It's me, it's all me, it's all mine." Yet they are both arrested, taken to a paddy wagon, and then there's a show up that is done. Now, I spoke with a couple of jury members who told me this is what caused us to believe Terrell is guilty. So in the show ups, they bring Stefan over to Jamal, who is in critical condition on the floor, extremely intoxicated. And they say, "Is this the man that shot you?" And Jamal looks away. Apparently, when they bring over Terrell, Detective Matrassia says Jamal nods.
That's what they say he did. It doesn't matter if he nodded or not. He was in no position to make any identification of anyone, and we still don't know if he did. It's not like he stuck his finger out and went, "Yeah, that's the guy who shot me," and he's out, right? That's not what happened.
They actually did not even do a show-up identification with the other guy, Rakeem Henley, who was shot, and he was not in critical condition.
They also didn't bother to swab the hands of either Terrell or Stefan, right? That would be so critical to figuring out who did or did not commit this horrible crime.
And Jason, I think it was clear to arresting officers this had to have been Stefan. It was in his hand. He confesses. That's probably why they didn't even swab their hands. And then, you know, somehow the story gets twisted and it's now in Terrell because of what they call a dying declaration. Terrell always says, he goes, "There were two lives lost that night, mine and Jamal Cruz. And I feel bad because Jamal Cruz didn't get justice."
This is a free call from
Terrell,
an inmate at Maximum Security Facility. Thank you for using Securus. You may start the conversation now.
Hello.
Hey, Terrell.
Hi, Tom.
Thanks for calling in. I know we have limited time, so let's get right to it. Can you take us back to the awful night of this crime and give us your perspective, having lived through this nightmare yourself?
Well, back at that night, the two dudes approached, and they were talking to Stefan about something. The problem wasn't with me. So we went outside in front of the club. Stefan wanted my keys to go get his cigarettes. So when we go to the car, the two dudes are approaching. So I see them two dudes. I'm like, "Oh, man, here we go." So I turn around to go to the driver's side of the car. Then I hear shots. So I just run into my car. As soon as I run to my car, cop is like, "On us." He had the gun on me. "Yo, put your hands on the steering wheel." So I put my hands on the steering wheel, and he keeps on saying it. But he's talking to Stefan. So he puts his hands on the steering wheel, and he's like, "Yo, I'm sorry, I love you, I love you." The police officer's partner, and he's like, "Oh, yo, the passenger's got the gun." So as soon as he opens up the door, Stefan says, "It's me, it's all mine." He's like, "It's you?" He's like, "Yeah, it's me." So when he took him out, he's already handcuffed him. The other cop that had the gun on us, he comes, he slaps the cuffs on the wrist, my wrist, and slams me on the floor, brings me back to the paddy wagon. There was a guy that was shot. I didn't know no one was shot. I could see blood. This dude's hurt. So this dude's shot in the chest, and this dude's like doing a show up with this guy shot in the chest, asking him, this him. The guy just looked at me and put his head down. He didn't say nothing. He didn't do nothing. He didn't say nothing. He just put his head down. So then they had put me back in the paddy wagon. They bring me back to the station. When they bring me back to the station, you know, they do the mugshot, the fingerprints, whatever. They brought me into a room with two detectives. I asked for my lawyer.
Detective Angelo Avant was the lead detective. He was the one that questioned me the first time in the first night.
So he's like, "Oh, you know, you want a cigarette? I'm like, "No." He's like, "You want water?" I'm like, "No." And he kept on trying to talk to me. And I'm like, I want my lawyer. So he leaves the room and he comes back and he brings me back to holding cell. So one of them times, I'm like, "Yo, I'm banging on the door." Cop comes. He's like, "Oh, what you banging on the door?" I'm like, "I want my phone call." He's like, "Phone call?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Well, you're getting plenty of phone calls. We are going." I'm like, "Where am I going?" He's like, "You're going to jail." I'm like, "What the hell?" They bring me in the bus. They transport me there. And I find out Monday, the arraignment, that I'm getting charged with murder. I go up into the courtroom. Had a split up. Stefan was on the left side, I was on the right side. So they read Stefan's charges, 7 bold in possession of a firearm, and that was that. He goes, it's Terrell Barrows, first degree murder. I'm like, they charging me with murder? I promise you on everything I love, I did not do it. He admitted it on the scene to the cop. That's the part I don't understand.
I don't understand it either, because it should have been over right then and there.
Excuse me, but they told me I gotta get off the phone.
Okay.
The caller has hung up.
I have never and may never again hear of a case in which the actual shooter skates on the charges after confessing on the scene, right? I mean, at that point, this should be a very short podcast. That should be the end of it. I mean, this would be funny, except it's so freaking serious, right? And this is the system that we all rely on day in and day out. I'd like to believe that we have people who are doing the job that they're paid to do. In this case, it's absolutely true. It failed society. It failed the victim. It failed Terrell. And that's what we're here to talk about. And then it gets weirder, because then you start with the eyewitness. The only eyewitness is a guy named Gregory Zorabedian. And he initially claimed he didn't see the shooting and then changed his testimony 6 days before the trial to say he saw Terrell do it. We have a document signed by the Assistant Attorney General promising not to charge him for perjury should he alter his testimony. That's maybe just a little bit of a red flag there. Now, get this, okay? This Gregory Zorabedian guy had, well, let's just call it an extensive criminal history, but that might not even be doing it justice. So his rap sheet went back 30 years. It included convictions, not arrests, convictions for living off the earnings of a prostitute, grand larceny, DUI causing death, cocaine possession, burglary, theft, escape, and that's just the beginning. So do we think that after doing all these other things he's done, he might be willing to lie in exchange for a deal? I would say that's a pretty good likelihood. And then let's get to Detective Charles Matrasia. Do you want to take that one, Lorgena?
He was actually the one who claims that he saw Jamal Cruz nod when they brought over Terrell. I asked Terrell, I said, yo, were you watching Jamal? He said, yeah, I was watching him. I said, did he nod? He said, no, he didn't do anything. So whether he did or did not is another story. But again, Jamal Cruz was under the influence of alcohol. He had a BAC of 0.162, which seems like a lot until we look at Rakeem, who had an actually higher BAC as well. And then both Stefan and Terrell were wearing white t-shirts and darker pants. Out of the group that Terrell was in, he was not the only one with two long black braids. He just wasn't. It was a style. If you look at the pictures of his friend group, he's not the only one with two long black braids. And so, out of a group of people wearing white shirts, dark pants, two long black braids, you're dying on the floor, and Detective Matrasia says, yeah, he nodded when we brought over Terrell. I mean, how unreal could that be? And so, now we're moving into GSR testing.
GSR stands for gunshot residue.
Yep, and there are three particles of gunshot residue that they test for when they're looking at clothing. So when Stefan and Terrell were initially arrested, Stefan was, you know, pulled out of the car and he was slammed against the side of the car. When Terrell was arrested, he was pulled out of the car and slammed to the ground. So he actually had some dirt on his white shirt in a specific area. What they initially tested was the chest area of both Terrell and of Stefan, because the theory is if someone is a shooter and they hold the gun straight ahead, that the gunshot residue will recoil and hit them in the chest area. So they talk about Stefan, they go, well, we found lead on Stefan. And they say, well, you also found lead on Terrell. So Terrell whispers to his attorney, ask if they happened to find the lead where my shirt was dirty. They said yes. So it makes sense that that's the only place on his clothing where they found lead. So this is all the information they had in terms of GSR at trial, but there is more GSR evidence to come, which is part of what we are motioning for with the new hearing coming up.
While we're on initials, right, we'll go from GSR to DNA. And the DNA report excluded Terrell from having held the gun. So let's touch for a second on the DNA expert for the state, who we know was, most unfortunately, quote unquote, experts are pro-prosecution. In fact, the whole system is pro-prosecution. Over 80% of judges are former prosecutors. So throughout the process, there's a tilt towards prosecution, and the experts that you're seeing may not be objective at all. And this is one of those cases where I think that's there's a strong argument to that effect. So, Nirjana, can you talk about that?
Yeah, Kara Lupino gave extremely pro-prosecution testimony. In the way that she had presented it, the attorney would ask a question, the prosecutor. She would respond and say, yes, and Terrell was included. And then you all of a sudden get to the very, very, very end, and they really quickly sneak in a couple of lines of Terrell was excluded and Stefan Bodden's DNA could not be excluded. So when I'm talking to the juror, she goes, I don't even really remember him being excluded. It was so confusing. There were a lot of numbers thrown out. Terrell seemed to be included in almost every mixture that they're talking about. It's absolutely insane. And if I was in the jury, I would have thought the same thing.
The state's witness essentially muddied the waters of what was a pretty cut and dry DNA report that excluded Terrell from having ever held the gun. But then there's Rokeem Henley, the other guy who got shot that night. His testimony, along with the ballistic evidence known at the time of trial, make it an actual impossibility that Terrell could have been the shooter.
He does testify, and when I asked him the same question when I met with him, he said the only person standing close to Jamal Cruz was Stefan Bodden. So I said, here's the discrepancy. Did you see who shot you? He said, no. I said, okay, well, ballistic evidence proves that the shot was made from near contact to 18 inches away, and you are telling me that the only person standing near contact to 18 inches away from Jamal Cruz was Stefan Bodden? He said, yes, but I didn't see him shoot the gun. It's kind of a confusing testimony. You don't see Stefan do it, but you also claim you did not see Terrell outside. You don't know who Terrell is. The only time he saw Terrell was at trial. So if Rokeem had never seen Terrell and the shot was made from near contact to 18 inches away, it is impossible that Terrell was the shooter.
Nevertheless, the incentivized witness, the muddy DNA report, and of course, the testimony of Detective Matrasia were too much to overcome. And Terrell was sentenced to 2 life sentences plus 30 years.
This is a free call from
Terrell,
an inmate at Maximum Security Facility. Thank you for using Securus. You may start the conversation now.
Hello.
Okay. The investigators in your case, Terrell, it was Detective Matrasha and Detective Angelo, right?
Yeah. Detective Angelo was he was the leader of the case. Matrasha was the one that lied about Jamal saying it was me at the show up. So what I was told was this from a lot of lawyers, and they all gave me the same answer. Y'all in this situation, they pin this on you. It's because you asked for your lawyer. I asked for my lawyer. That's my right. They said, yeah, but you didn't tell them what they wanted to hear, and they threw it on you. Jamal ain't here. So you could put any words in that man's mouth you want, because you can't put him on a stand and cross-examine him. So what the cops do, they go on a stand and they think, no, they know that the jury look at them as superheroes. The jury don't think that the cops are going to go on a stand and lie. And that's what they did. And Jamal ain't here. Now, this is before this even going on with George Floyd. This was in like 2012, 2013. So around that time, that climate was like, oh, no, the police ain't going to lie on this kid.
Terrell, you've gone through this insane nightmare. Everything that could go wrong has gone wrong so far. But then comes the moment where the jury goes out and they come back in. Did you think that they were going to find you innocent? Tell us about that moment.
They bring me down in the elevator to the courtroom. And you can just feel like the tension in the courtroom. And the jury would come in. Their faces are funny. They said I was guilty. And then everybody, just my family, everybody was just like, man, he's innocent. Like, they just went crazy. I'm just sitting there, like, in shock. I'm in shock. Like, everybody's standing up. I'm the only one sitting down. And what got me out of the trance is I seen Detective Angelo Avant laughing. So I said, yo, what you think this is, funny? He just looked at me. And I looked at Jamal's family. And I turned around to him. I said, I didn't do this to your son. I promise you, I did not do this to your son. I did not do this. They didn't get justice for your son. They're lying to you. And they're just looking at me like in a shock. Everyone's going crazy. So during that commotion, I seen the prosecutor like hug the brother like they won the Super Bowl, smacking his back like, yeah, yeah, we got him. And I'm just looking at him like, yo, lying to this family. Like, this is a big lie. Like, you just found an innocent kid guilty for a crime you didn't do. They just wanted the conviction. I know they know I didn't do it. Because the prosecutor, you know when you see bogus charges, but you still go forward with it because you want a conviction. They don't care if you're innocent.
Yeah, they're thinking about their future, their aspirations, the way they can be successful. They know that's by having a good conviction rate by and large, but it's like it's some sort of sick scoreboard. And there are decent prosecutors out there. There's some really good ones too, but the ones that are willing to ignore evidence of innocence and prosecute clearly bogus cases like yours just to get another notch on their belt, just to move up the ladder, they're a disgrace, and they're actually a menace to public safety.
They use our backs as a stepping stone to the top. They ruin our family to make their family better. Yeah, they just look at it as money sign. Like, I ain't cattle. You know?
And as if this case couldn't get worse or weirder, Stefan Bodden put out a song to, I guess he was trying to rid himself of the guilt of skating on the murder rap and allowing his friend to rot in prison, right?
He wrote this song called Letter to Terrell. It's really more of a guilt trip, saying things like, we should have never went out to the club that night. It's painful that you're in that cell. It's painful on my mother.
And I'm sorry that you in that gym. It's painful on my mother. But I think about you every day and night.
How is he out and Terrell's in prison?
Stefan Bodden is now dead. He was shot in a car shooting in 2017.
It's just, it's too much. I mean, the good news is he's, the only good news here, I guess, is that he's got a fantastic team now. We've got some momentum. Can you talk about that new evidence? Talk about his new lawyer and what lays ahead.
The original theory was if you hold a gun straight out in front of you, the GSR or gunshot residue will fly back and hit the chest area, as I mentioned before. However, Bob Kando, Terrell's newer attorney, went ahead and looked at the trajectory of the bullets, and he had a couple of questions about where the shot was actually made from. How is it possible that Rakim didn't see the shooter? How is it possible that if Jamal gave a dying declaration, that he gave it to the wrong person? And how is it possible that if Stefan's the real shooter, we find only lead on him? Where are the other particles of GSR? So Bob Kando goes ahead and puts in a request for other areas of Bodden's clothing to be analyzed, including his crotch and belt area. Lo and behold, they come back with more particles of GSR, which ends up being huge news. Putting together trajectory of the bullets, putting together GSR, Stefan Bodden actually took the shots from right next to his belt. He actually did not hold the gun straight ahead. So if that were to happen, someone who's extremely intoxicated wouldn't be able to see the gun. And when I actually ended up speaking to Rakim later, I said, well, you know, the new evidence really says that the gun was next to him. He responds, he goes, oh, that might explain it. So that might explain why Rakim didn't see that Stefan shot him. So that's very exciting. And with this new evidence, with the new affidavit that we have written, new eyewitnesses who are coming forward, family members of Stefan Bodden who are coming forward and saying, I know Stefan did it. He told me multiple times. We are taking all of this, and Bob is pushing for a hearing in September with a motion for a new trial. And we're hoping that we can get Terrell home very soon.
And that leads to what happens now and what can people do?
A mini documentary came out about Terrell Barrows. Please check it out. The title of it is on YouTube. It's called Making an Exoneree 2020- The Story of Terrell Barrows. And in that, you'll really see everything that we outlined throughout this entire podcast, as well as getting to hear from people who heard from Stefan himself that he did it. And then there's also a change.org petition that sends a letter to the governor, who has been pretty vocal about, you know, the BLM movement and everything that's happening right now. So we're hoping that she'll also hop onto this. change.org/free Terrell Barrows. So it's change.org/free Terrell Barrows.
Our wonderful producers have put the link in the podcast description. So you can just scroll down on whatever platform you're listening to. Please share it on social media. Tell people, listen to the episode, watch the video content that's out there. We can win this. So now this is the part where I get to thank our guests in this case, Nirjana Hendy. Thank you for being here. And of course, Terrell Barrows, we're here for you. We're going to fight for you. And thank you as well for sharing your thoughts with us. Now I'm going to turn off my microphone, kick back in my chair, and let Nirjana Hendy share her final thoughts in the segment we call Closing Arguments.
Terrell is an amazing man. I could go on and on about who he is as a person, the character that he has, and the change that he will make when he is brought home. And it has been such an honor to be in his life, to be in his mother's life, to be in his attorney's life. And I'm hoping that we can prove Terrell's innocence and bring him home to his mom, to his family, and to society where he belongs, and where I am 1,000% sure that he is going to make a difference. This is not the end, and it's definitely not the beginning. This, you know, story with Terrell has happened many times in the past, and unfortunately will continue to happen unless people like me, like you, Jason, come together and bring Terrell home.
And now over to you, Terrell. Again, thank you for being here, and thank you for your courage and your spirit. Hang in there. We're all out here rooting for you, and more importantly, fighting for you. So now over to you for closing arguments.
I just want to thank everybody for listening. And I want to start off by thanking Jason for giving me this platform to explain my situation. We need people like Jason, Mark Howard, Marty Tankwood, the Georgetown students, Najana, Leo, Caroline. They are fighting so hard for me. My attorney, Robert Cando, just want to thank him for being there for me and really, really fighting for me, because he knows I'm really innocent, you know. I also got to thank the two main women in my life, my mother and Ann Lisa. If it wasn't for Ann Lisa reaching out to Mark Howard, that none of this right now, this interview, the documentary, the petition, none of this would be going on right now if this wasn't for her. I want to thank my mother for always being there for me. Her strength is where I get it from. But right here, I'm innocent, and she told me to fight until I get my freedom. I got a post-conviction hearing coming up, and I'm fighting for a new trial, and I'm fighting for freedom. I need your help. I just need as much people to sign this petition.
You have 1 minute left.
And spread the word. We need allies. There's a lot of us in here that are voiceless, and I am blessed to have the family I have, to have this voice to speak, because it's given me a platform to speak for the voiceless in this prison. I feel like people are putting in my life for a reason. I know that I'm going to get out of jail, and I got to fight on the front lines for people that are innocent in prison, because it has to stop. These cops need to be held accountable. They're not just killing us in the streets. They're killing us in these courts. And there's no consequences when they do it. They need to be accomplished. Too many people in the prison system with their lives took in for something they didn't do. It has to stop.
Don't forget to give us a fantastic review wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps. And I'm a proud donor to the Innocence Project, and I really hope you'll join me in supporting this very important cause and helping to prevent future wrongful convictions. Go to innocenceproject.org to learn how to donate and get involved. I'd like to thank our production team, Connor Hall and Kevin Wardis. The music in the show is by three-time Oscar-nominated composer Jay Ralph. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at Wrongful Conviction and on Facebook at Wrongful Conviction Podcast. Wrongful Conviction with Jason Flom is a production of Lava for Good Podcast in association with Signal Company No. 1.